Welcome to Conscious TV with Tom and Ramon. Go over our business here first. Make sure you visit the website, conscious-tv.com. We've got a lot of new things going on there. Our forums are going to become active. I've got a little bit of help from Kathy. Thank you, Kathy, so much.
Thank you.
So check out the forums. I'll try to make the link to the forums a little bit more visible on the page. I'll get at that when I have some time. And we also have the new paradigm page that we're putting together, which has got just a ton of really good ideas on there. So make sure you check that out. Also, Ramon and I are blue collar guys. We work for a living, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And we really appreciate any donations that can be dropped our way. Besides that, Ramon, who in the heck have we got tonight?
Today we have a special person. Let me start off by saying that she's a starseed in full germination, emerging. Jenna was born on Earth a seer 30 years ago. She's an indigo adult evolving into crystal conscious artist, clairvoyant, and gardener. Jenna has been in tune with her extrasensory abilities since birth and has had a vast array of experience. Let's welcome Jenna. Yay!
Hi, Jenna.
Hi, Tom.
Hi. Hi, Tom. So let's start off from the childhood.
Yeah. Well, first off, I want to just thank you guys for doing this amazing work and for following your inner promptings and all promptings to do the work that you're doing. Because it does take a bunch of brave mystics to do this work, and I just want to give you props for that.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank
you. Yeah, it's been a really interesting life thus far. I try not to dwell too much on my story, but it continues to come up. And I think that in tradition, and in a lot of indigenous cultures too, is that they did take the time to sit around and to even weekly, sort of a weekly event, to sit down and tell your stories and to share. And I think that's kind of what's going on here, except we're dealing with more of a digital fire. but yeah, as a child, I had a lot of out-of-body experiences. I had a lot of beings coming to me and the only reason I know this is because the cognizant memory of it was ever present until I became a teenager and had to really start to acclimatize to social conditioning and realize that what I wanted to talk about was just not what wanted to be heard, or it just wasn't accepted, and that was okay because I did have a supportive family. However, I think one of the most incredible things that I have memory of is the recurring set of patterns where I would go through almost like a reliving a death of a previous life. And in this life, I was in actually a river, and I think I was a logger. And I would go through this whole motion. I was actually like a log driver, and I was standing on top of these logs, you know how they used to float in the river?
Right.
And I would be jumping across them. And this is like, you know, me in my little bed as a little girl, and I would eventually sink down in the water. I'd struggle. And I remember the visceral feeling of the bark. I remember all of it as though it's just as tactile as this here now. And that's why it stuck so much. And eventually what would happen is I'd go under the water and then I would come up. And it was like a gateway. I mean, I try not to analyze too much, but this is my experience. And that I would go up and I would be with this sort of group of guardians. But it was totally, and I say guardians because they did feel parental. They did feel bigger than me, but they did feel like family. And this was my gateway, and I don't fully know why. But I would go up and I was actually able to see Earth, and it was probably the size of, like, you know, if you were to hold your hand up in front of your face and hold a little circle, that's how big it was. And I used to have long conversations with these beings. There was actually like a tube that I could go back and forth in. And at the time, Mighty Mouse was kind of cool, and I got to see that occasionally. And that Mighty Mouse had this amazing way of the, you know, punching through the time space barrier. And it felt like when I went through this tube, and I understand it now because I've gone on to study quantum physics and things like that, it felt like I was rushing through like a thing of hard packed sand. There was total resistance, but I would come out on the other side and I'd be able to hang out and, you know, have this time. And I would go back and forth, but there came a time where they kind of said, you know, you can't keep doing this. And I had to make the choice of actually staying on Earth. And so I figured it out. I mean, I had this new consciousness. I had the consciousness of a child that was really playful and just wanted to play. And so there was a lot that went on there, but there was also, you know, my family's validation as I grew up, you know, with lights and just with extrasensory abilities that were validated, just talking and being honest. So.
Were your parents or grandparents intuitive?
Yeah, my mom was. She's moved on from this plane. But yeah, and it was kind of really taboo, I think, in her time to talk about these things, because we're still living in the memory of times where, you know, witches were burned. You know, there's still legislation. I mean, the word witch is very powerful. It's very loaded in saying, you know, that a lot of seers or people with these abilities were just, you know, heathens or whatever. But my mom, you know, when I was a teenager and things started really picking up and I went to her, she went, okay, you know, I've been waiting for you to come to me. And I mean, she always knew. But yeah, it is inherited through bloodline. And I do also understand, since certain regression experiences, that you do, like, I remember choosing my mom. And I love her.
Mm. Ooh, I can definitely validate that whole thing with the going through sand.
Yeah,
that recently started happening to me, and so far twice.
Mm-hmm.
The second time it happened to me, I was having an out-of-body experience, and I said, I want to go visit Tom. Okay. And then I went through the concrete, turned into like this whirlpool thing, and mm-hmm. I went through it, and then when I came to the other side, I didn't come to Tom now, but I went to Tom in the 1980s.
Oh, cool.
And I don't know if I described him correctly. What do you think?
He described me pretty close to the T from what what I looked like in the early 80s.
Were you wearing an AC/DC shirt?
Oh, no, no, no.
Oh. No. But he was wearing a leather jacket. Yeah, so that was really weird for me because I was like, no, not this Tom. I want Tom now. But I guess.
Well, that's so funny. That's so interesting because from what I've seen through different experiences is that it's like strata. Like you look at, say, a fragmented part of the road or a cliff when you're driving along the road, and there's all these layers. And that actually all these layers are actually all happening at the same time. The yeah. Tom that was then is still happening. And, you know, I mean, I try not to puzzle myself too much about the memories that come up about past lives and all of this, but that it's still happening. There is, you know, there in one sense, there is no time and space, and that you can totally access all lives and all knowledge from any point.
Yeah. So let's go on to the part with your friends, the Elf Kingdom.
Oh, yeah.
How did that come about?
In a really mischievous way. in a wonderful way. And I really, just to say this, is that, you know, they're here with me now. And that I really feel from my heart that I'm speaking into this dimension, into the third, and all these ones reverberating out on behalf of this kingdom. And it is vast, and it's been almost forgotten. And that for myself, I didn't believe in it at all until I came to this land that I'm on now. And it's a tremendous story, and I've been writing about it, and I've been trying to get it down to 800 words for this great publication called The Fairies and Angels Magazine that Adrian Dumas has put out, and that's been a bit of a challenge because it is a story. But basically, what happened is that, you know, I had contact with, you know, various beings growing up, but, you know, I was kind of a tomboy. I was really into rocks and crystals. Like, my parents could not drive by a gravel pile without me going, pull over, you know? Like, I wanted to just, it was a really strong calling. And in my, you know, early 20s, I was in university doing my studies. And being from Canada, we do tree planting up there. The north of Canada is absolutely devastated, and there's reforestation going on. It's basically a tree farm that's going on, and it's a massive you know, it's just deforestation. I mean, you know, it's a mess. That's what my occupation was before coming into this. I did it for 7 seasons as a bushwhacker. So I would go into the north forest for several months at a time. You know, we go into cities, little towns occasionally, but we were really totally off the grid. We had generators and all that. But prior to my contact with this here on this land, I'd been in the bush, that's what we call it, for about 4 months. And I'd taken time off, and I went to the World Science and Spirit Transformation Conference here at ESETI, and that had just sufficiently blown my mind, so I decided to come back for some self-mastery classes because I felt so drawn to this land.
So was that, and that was the 2009 or 2008?
2 years ago, about 2 years ago, yeah.
Yeah, 2009.
And, yeah, so a lot has developed since then, but the initial contact happened, you know, from, because it all fits together. It's a magnificent puzzle. I mean, you guys know this. You're living. It's so basically, I came back to investigate. I felt very drawn to this land. I never really felt, and I know a lot of people feel it here, it feels more like home than a lot of places you've been. And the reason is because it's a frequency that's being held here, and there's bridges that are being gapped between various kingdoms that are all really on the other side. But we're kind of the ones under the loop. So basically what happened is that I, you know, being a camper, being a bush lady or whatever, is that I went and parked myself under, like, the most ancient tree. I was just like, this is the spot. And I went down and I set up my tent. And the day went on and the energy was really strong. And I had just been learning, like, how to navigate the world with my abilities. I suppressed them for a long time. So he said he was a really safe haven for me. So I was really feeling like strong energies, and I was like, I need to sleep. And this happens to a lot of people when they get here. They just go, whoa, I got to lay down. So I went to bed pretty early, and I woke up in the night, and I had the fly off my tent so I could see the stars up through the trees. And I heard small footsteps outside my tent. And, you know, I was really familiar with energetic signatures of wild animals, from cougars to bears to raccoons, squirrels. And these footsteps really were not of an animal. The energetic signature was not of an animal. There was no scent. And I really feel that I'm quite adept in familiarizing myself with the wilderness. So I could feel this energy coming off, but I could hear the steps. And they sounded like human steps, but they were very small. And I'm laying there on my stomach, and my body was kind of like, my heart was pounding because I could feel this. But I also saw that it was an opportunity to totally move beyond fear. And I kind of lifted myself up, and I looked out through my screen towards this tree, and I saw something I don't think I would have ever imagined could exist in this dimension. But it was clearly in this dimension, and I was fully awake because I stayed awake for a while. I got up, I walked around, I checked it out. But anyways, I looked at my fly, and there was a being probably about 3 feet tall that was just exuding the kind of joy that it's hard to compare it to anything. And that, I mean, see, here's an experience. Like, I took psilocybin mushrooms when I was a teenager, and it was reminiscent of that. But this was, like, pure joy. Like, I haven't taken a lot of drugs in my life. This is not something that was a hallucination. This was a totally, totally manifest in this dimension. And this being looked back at me. It had very large, like, oval-shaped eyes, kind of like what gray aliens look like, but it had actually a smile from ear to ear, like the biggest smile I've ever seen, because it went right across this creature's face. It had pointed ears, and it also had full clothing. It had shoes, and it had a hat. And this just alarmed me. And if you couldn't feel the energy coming off this, which I'm sure anyone could that was going to have this experience, you'd be kind of freaked out. But because I could feel this love and this just total joy, I wasn't afraid. And I looked just back at this being like, whoa. And he turned around and he walked into the grass behind the tree. And from then on, you know, life has been pretty different, because I've gone on to have a relationship with this various beings of this whole kingdom. So,
can you give us a little more description on this being? Was he like, what complexion?
It was very dark. I've had other experiences with them since, but the initial one, what I understand is that it's a manifest form of what is known as an elf, and or a gnome. For a long time, I thought it was a gnome, but I got the clarification is that elves and gnomes and fairies and nixies and all this stuff is very, they all have their place. They're all very different, and they want to be recognized as that, but there is no separation. So it was more about the energy that came with it than the actual appearance of it. But it was basically this, there are artists that I've looked at since that I was not into before, you know, people like Wendy Froud. There are artists that are depicting these beings, because I was in a bookstore in Olympia when I was leaving Isetti to drop off the rental car, and I found this book, and that was the being, and it was in watercolor, very big eyes. It was the smile. The thing I remember the most is the smile and the pointed ears and the uniformness of the outfit. It blew my lid right off, because I had no previous belief or recollection of any of this. And for me, it was just a really big shocker. So
so what are you saying, that they're spiffy dressers?
Yeah. The elves and fairies always like to look their best.
I thought that was just a human quality. All right.
No, it's not. It's a, you know, there in other cultures abound throughout the galaxies. There is a perhaps much more time for beauty and art, and it's not something that you need to deny. You know, This is part of this expression, and that the pointed hat phenomenon is real. I've seen barn gnomes since. They do wear, there's a barn gnome over at the where the horses are that Pam works with that I've seen, and it has a pointy hat, and I've inquired about this, and it has something to do with how they tap into zero-point energy. So there's a lot there in folklore and in fairy tales.
So you're saying kind of like the pyramid kind of thing, but except a cone,
yeah,
huh?
Yeah, but we all
focus. A way to focus to get to that energy?
Yeah, because we have, from what I've seen, some of us, you know, we've got chakras and energy centers all throughout our body. We also have several above our head, and then at times, if we so wish, we can expand our energy bodies out really wide. I don't claim to know fully anything or too much about this kingdom, but you know, I've gotten some pretty big downloads about that, and that was one of them. It just helps them hone certain energy.
Yeah.
That's my best way of describing it.
Is there any way that, because going back to you being able to detect animals' energies, and I'm assuming plants as well.
Yeah.
Is there any way that we ourselves can practice, learn how to do that? Or is that just something that's gifted? Or
no, it's absolutely something that you can nurture and you can bridge the gap back to. I think the reason I said about my previous occupation is because I think that's the reason that this happened. Because I had worked at this job for like 6-7 seasons on and off. and that it's a very difficult job to describe, but you literally, you merge with nature in a way and your body that you never will, I don't think, in any other way. And it's not something that I romanticize or really want to embellish, but there was something in my energy field which they saw, which I think was emanating something that looked like family to them, or that someone that was so close to nature that they felt comfortable enough to bridge the gap.
I think that sounds like the key to me, is somebody who is close enough to the natural world.
But yeah. What I've experienced, I think, I mean, people are throwing around the word shaman, shamanic, you know, these different quests. And I think we all have our different way of accessing that. But when it comes, I don't know. All I know is my own experience, and that there was a process that I experienced through the work that I did of planting. Like, I've planted hundreds and thousands of trees by hand and working out and healing that landscape. Sure, it's not a forest. It is a tree farm. But there was a melding or a hollowing out of myself. Because when you're out there, you're doing a repetitive task. You're planting a tree every 7 to 10 seconds sometimes. You get out of the way, and it becomes totally like meditation. You hollow out, and you clear a lot of your stuff through that action. But then at some point, I do believe like there was a merge that happened. And I have a lot of friends that still work in this field. They're just ecstatic beings because they know what their body is and they know its potential. And that's one aspect of this awakening and of this remembrance. But really, I think this happened because of the, like, I was really fresh from that job. I'd only been out of the bush for about a month. So my energy signature to them, because that's how it looks. There are, you know, all these emanations, and they go, ooh, who's that? Yeah. You know, what's going on here? And they, and the thing is that they manifested into this density, into the third density, and allowed me to look him in the eyes because they wanted me to see them. And they wanted to begin this conversation and this dialogue with all of us. And a lot of us know in our hearts, we can feel that they're there. And here I am saying today that, yeah, they are. That's my belief, because that's my experience.
I just got to tell a funny story. Tom knows the story already. But I recently started planting mints in my living room. And they're pretty big. So I started cutting some to make tea. Yeah. And, you know, I'm saying thank you and sorry. And I was kind of feeling bad. And then I got to a point where I was like looking for more to cut, and I heard in my voice, in my mind, that's enough, but with such an attitude that I was like, okay, I'm sorry. And I just like backed off. I put the scissors down and just backed away. And that's actually, for me, I would have to say that's my first sober experience with plants. Mm-hmm. I did have another time back in college when I was under the influence and a plant was complaining the whole night. That's a whole different story.
But it's a very real experience, and it's something good to kind of put in your toolbox of experiences that you can draw on. But I think really, like, as far as bridging the gap back to nature, it does start. I mean, there you are where you are, and a lot of people in their apartments, and they're, you know, I had house plants for years, and I didn't really fully understand why I was creating a jungle in my apartment, and all my friends were kind of like, whoa, you've got a jungle in your apartment. I understand now, but that, you know, that's where it starts, is just the pure intention of wanting to you know, work with plants and the beings that surround them.
Yeah. Have you ever watched The Secret Life of Plants?
Yes, I read the book as a fairly young person. And when I looked back on different experiences, like as far as like as a kid, I was doing all kinds of stuff that were just so indicative of somebody that already had this knowledge. But my ego and my imposed adult self at some point kind of cut that, but it didn't last for long. Thank goodness. So.
Let's go into some of the other, because that one being is not the other one. You've had contact with several beings.
No, he was, I think, and I do call him a he mostly based on his shoes. I think he was kind of the ambassador for them. And I mean, there's an area here on the land that this happened, and I visited it regularly in my mind and in person. And it's so funny because I look at that area where this happened and it looks more like a hologram in this version than it did that night. You know, it's super surreal, but I'm very aware of different states and carrying over the awareness in my sleep and, you know, various states that I know that this was a very real experience.
So most of your, I'm kind of relating on my own experience with other beings and how I experience them is that out of the corner of my eye and the shadows or the rustling here and rustling there that kind of tips me off to their physical manifestations. Is that kind of the way that you experience it?
Tom, what I understand is that the nature spirits, for myself, are actually the closest to me in frequency. And it's very similar to the idea of when you pass over into another dimension, you leave this body, that what you're thinking of is where you go and where your consciousness is. So kind of think of where you're coming from and what you're related to. That's, you know, what you're going to attract. And I could not myself, because of my ego, make the connection to that. But that I do understand that the rods and the cones and the eyes, you know, looking forward, you know, that the really the side of your eyes is what sees into the dimensions. But also that you choose to see what you want to see. You do see with your brain and you don't see with your eyes. And I've seen this myself more and more through personal experience because I didn't think any of this was real. You know, being a rock hound and a tomboy and seeing fairies in New Age rock shops, I was like, no way. Even like 6 months prior, I was in a rock shop in Thunder Bay, Ontario, and picking up these crystals. And I remember looking at these images and not relating to them. I mean, beyond the elf kingdom and the fairies and all of that, they are all related. The fauns, it's vast, it's huge. So, yeah, there's just a lot.
I remember when I was up there, you were telling me a story. I don't remember correctly. Mm-hmm. I believe she was an elf. Very beautiful.
Well, basically what happened, I don't have a way of categorizing or organizing. Perhaps later in my life I'll put together this information. It's only just begun. It's a very long but short odyssey thus far. And that I've had a lot of experiences with humanoid beings that are, they're not like that little guy. They're much more humanoid and they are all female. I've had a lot of experiences with them here and they show me how to do things. I never gardened before here. I was given the opportunity to grow food here, and they were showing me things that I previously did not know through symbols and through feelings and through different applications. But I have I formed relationships through different modalities to identify their names with mostly feminine guardians of the land here. And they look like about 30-year-old women that are about 4 feet tall. You know, they've got the goddess energy. That's why I say they look about 30. But they're shorter. You know, Paula Harris has, God bless Paula Harris and her work and Mary Rodwell's work and and these wonderful, wonderful women in this field, is Paula Harris has some photos of some clarion beings.
Yes, we have one up on the site, actually.
Yeah, and when I saw that, I went, whoa. I mean, I never heard the word clarion. You know, sometimes a lot of these beings just want to move beyond the identification. They laugh at me sometimes when I ask, who are you? You know, where do you come from? What level are you coming from? I mean, they'll cover those details if that can help you identify and to connect with them deeper. I mean, really, it's all a path back to yourself. It's not so much about, they want to help remind you, they want to help lead that path back and help you remember. But yeah, that's very reminiscent of some of the beings that I've had contact with directly that have been working with me. They're shorter, yeah. I mean, I'm a small lady, and I'm starting to understand my lineage as well, and the gentle unfoldment of this whole hilarious and beautiful story. But yeah, that some of them are very similar to those photos.
Yeah. Is it kind of, because I've heard stories where certain beings and races, they don't have names. They recognize each other by, recognize the world around them by the energy signature, because everything has an energy signature.
Oh, yeah, totally.
So it's kind of like that? Like, they don't really have a name? It's just...
Well, some of them do have names, because it's kind of like a tone. And my healing practice, which is still really developing, is very sound and frequency based, and that's also how I operate as well, is you know, on frequency. And I mean, this is how a huge part of our reality is operating. But I guess the names of some of these beings they've given to me, but they're like songs, and for me to say them would be like singing a really sacred song, you know. And it's not that I don't want to give them up, because everyone can sing those songs, but the internet's a big place.
Yeah.
And it's sacred. Some of these names are very sacred, and they're very ancient. And that when I was a teenager, you know, I was channeling through my hands. I didn't understand a lot of this, and it was really great when I met folks like James Gillen, you know, some elders in the community that could see what was going on in my energy and could identify, okay, yeah, you got it going on. You've got these connections. And it was really reassuring. And again, I just want to say that the community that we're forming and that we're establishing is number one. It's what's going to make this whole thing, it's going to go.
I'm just... When it comes to this, I'm always amazed.
Yeah, me too.
It's just beyond words sometimes.
And it keeps evolving. That's the thing. I mean, since that initial contact with this, oh my gosh, I'd love to see him again. I'd be relieved. It's been such a massive unfoldment of information. And what I also understand is that your guides, I mean, we've all got a lot of guides and a big crew that's working with us, and, you know, main teachers and guides and houses of consciousness, is that they will never give you more than you can handle. So you can always say, okay, whoa, like, that's enough, you know. And I've had to do that, you know, and because I had to put the brakes on, because there is a thinning of the veil that's happening worldwide. I mean, there's an energy coming in to this delicate planet, you know, from the center of a galaxy, from what I understand, that's activating a lot of people. And where this experience happened is on a major energy point of the planet, on the original Earth grid, where, you know, energy upspringings or vortexes or whatever you want to call them. And that magnetic anomaly that it is causes what I understand the veil, because I've experienced it and I can see through it, is thinner. And that you can have these experiences if you're ready or you want to. And they won't engage people that aren't ready and aren't asking for it. It's really up to you. So, yeah.
Absolutely.
I experienced myself a tall being there. And I was talking about this with Stephen last week, I believe.
Yeah, I listened to that.
Yeah, and it was my first day there, and I just kept seeing something from the corner of my eye, and I remember mentioning it to James, and he was like, "Oh yeah." But the funny thing about James is, no matter how weird of something you say to James, it's always like, "Yeah, no big deal."
Yeah, well, that's kind of what my experience was, is that when after that initial night, you know, James was pretty much a stranger to me who kind of felt like family. I was like, why do I feel like this guy's my bro, you know? And I came up to him in the morning and I told him, and I was just like alarmed, but like so enlivened from it, just kind of high from it and just buzzing from it. He goes, oh yeah, that's the elves. And I went, what? You know? And
Yeah.
it just wasn't in my understanding. But also too is that I'd had experiences growing up with very tall beings. And that's why I came to Iseti, because I'd seen a lot of craft, I'd had a lot of experiences, and I wanted to know. I wanted to understand more. So when the 3-foot-tall being came outside my tent, I was kind of like, okay, tell me the connection. And that's when I realized I was the one out of the loop. I was the one trying to figure, you know, trying to say that all of this was separate and they were all in different categories and dimensions and all that. But I realized that there was some kind of funny little game going on and that I was the one out of the loop. And that when I could actually remember that there's other planets and civilizations that don't have the veil, the heavy veil that we have here on Earth, that's the funny joke, I think, that live in total cognizance of each other and work with each other, you know, it just everything opened up.
So do you think that this veil we've had for several hundred years, it's something that human conditioning, human psychology or consciousness put up little by little through the ages?
Well, I mean, in my studies and in my own thinking is that that's a thing I always tripped over. That's a thing I always went, okay, what? Because I studied the Industrial Revolution. I've studied this, you know, whole renaissance of knowledge, you know, continuing to kind of unravel and re-ravel itself and to wrap itself up all in the head. And I kind of just kept going, when did it happen? When did that happen? When did we think that we were separate from nature? And you know, I have ideas about it, and that's all I have is ideas, but that I know that there's a time, and it's some of it's out of history, some of it's out of time, and all we have right now is folklore.
No.
Folklore and fairy tales. And I'll tell you, I started looking into this stuff and it makes a lot of sense. Sure, it's allegory, sure, it's symbolism. But if you're intelligent and smart enough and keen enough and you want to know, you go into it because there's a lot there. But I don't know when it happened. I have ideas about it, but I'm not going to be so bold to speak because, you know, I think that there's something happening here on Earth that was intended to happen. And it's not that everything's spun out of orbit and it's not in our free will to act out, but that, yeah. It happened at some point where there was that separation, and I don't know if I feel confident enough to speak on that because I don't feel that I want to call out my fellow, you know, earthly friends to be like, you did this, because it's not about guilt, because it could be part of the program that we're, you know, bringing it all back together now, that this reunion is in prophecy, also in their kingdom, that we're going to be able to bring this back together.
So pretty much they're waiting for us, pretty much.
Well, we're waiting for us too.
Yeah.
And they're waiting for, because I mean, I've seen there's whole chambers also of beings, you know. I mean, the inner earth is an idea to a lot of people, it's a theory to some geologists, but in my understanding, in my reality, the inner earth is a very real place, and that there's civilization. Vast, many different species that have been cohabitating for a long time, that have been in kind of a slumber. They have no relationship with the surface, and it is in their prophecy that they will return. Not prophecy, but story, that time will come. So.
So that the now, what do you know of their stories? I mean, you've mentioned it a couple times now. Their prophecies or their stories. What do you know of their stories?
Well, what I'm experiencing through meditation and through just direct experience is memory of actually being there, and that. I'm not really sure. And I think that everything is, you know, there are some appointed times. There is a finger pointing forward saying, here, go there. But that I really feel that since the time of Atlantis and Lemuria, which I understand were absolutely real, I've been studying Pangaea, I've been studying this whole, especially Pacific Northwest part of the planet, the shores of Lemuria, that... And I'm living next to this mountain that I'm experiencing just incredible phenomenon at there could be a time where we would have reunion, and that I have memories of other planets where the beings of this planet and the nature spirits, many many of them, work in complete cognizance of each other and recognition of each other. There's no separation, and there's no. They're able to see each other at all times, which is quite beautiful.
Right. So, gonna segue real quick here. I want to get this in this first hour before our second hour. There's a question that we like to ask all of our guests, and I figured I'd better ask you also. I'd like your definition of consciousness and how consciousness affects our reality.
See, I think that consciousness plus energy equals reality, and that intent is 9/10 of the law, and that if you could see with your eyes what your thoughts crystallize around you, you'd think twice about what you think, and to be self-aware. I mean, I've experienced, for myself, my greatest teacher about consciousness was Ramtha, and he didn't just talk to me about what consciousness was and what energy was and how it equaled my reality. He showed me, and he taught me how to make it visible in this reality and in this dimension. And my gosh, I am very thankful for that, because that's what happened. I mean, you can look in. I mean, the Ramtha School's got a huge following. I went up there for a few weeks. I did the practices, and I, as far as telepathy and manifestation and various other things, I can tell you, you are the creator, so you better get to it.
Is there any way, any exercises or anything that, for those of us who are starting to see things out of the corner of our eyes, or sometimes might see a little bit of an energy signature or an aura, anything that we can do that will enhance that?
Well, I think everyone, based on, you know, the time of year you're born, all these other conditions, your senses will all be really different, and that it's good to pay attention to that, because it's not one big eye, you know, and that it's really good to, I mean, if you want to tune into the nature spirits, you got to go at nature, and you've got to get beyond yourself. And the body, I think that... You got to get beyond the body, and it's not okay. My body's not there. But when you experience sensations of cold, or I don't want to do this, or things like that, you need to realize that the mind plays tricks, and that there's, you know, certainly limiting mental concepts about what you think and you can and cannot do. And for myself, is that the immersion in nature is really important, and it doesn't mean you have to torture yourself. Really, if you're seeing things out of the side of your eye, is to continue to look forward and to go within. Because if anything, before you see an energy signature, you're going to feel it, because that's how a lot of us do. And to just work internally with your whole system so that you can attune yourself to be able to sense them.
So I like to push meditation. Anybody I talk to that starts talking about any issues that they have, any problems of any kind, one of the first questions I ask is, well, do you meditate?
You need to reflect, because otherwise what we do is we just push it all out, we project it on the world around us, and then we begin to navigate the world that we create. And my goodness, that can make you quite the collision course, you know, because you'll just boom, boom, boom. You'll set up all these obstacles on a subconscious level. And that was a beautiful thing, that even in the subconscious, you're manifesting. Because here's a great story about our friend James, is that, you know, we love to eat sunflower seeds. He really likes to chew on them. You know, some of us smoke, some of us do other things, but he likes to chew on sunflower seeds and spit them out. Okay, so these sunflower seeds have been toasted, dried, picked, all this stuff. They come in those big bags, you know. And, you know, he's walking around the property all the time, just doing his thing, and he spit the sunflower seed out. Okay, it sprung up a whole huge sunflower like a month later. Like,
oh, nice.
I mean, he's spitting them all over the garden. And then, you know, it's great compost, whatever. And all of a sudden, out of nowhere, without planting, without digging, without that whole, you know, preconceived thought of how you make a flower grow, guy spits it out. You know, we all do have this God consciousness, but that the intention that you're putting towards the ground, towards all that, it springs up a flower. And it really showed to me how your subconscious, even in every effect, all of your thoughts are creating your reality. Not just in meditation, it's how you're walking throughout your days, you know.
Wow.
So you gotta be careful. Careful what you think.
Tom, how are we doing with time?
Oh, we got about 14 minutes.
Let's talk about, let's start off a little bit with your healing work, and then we'll continue there in the next hour.
Sure.
How did you get into healing?
Well, it all, of course, became with my own self crisis, that I was ill, but also that I was really drawn to rocks and minerals and gems. I was very understanding of them. I totally understood them, which I think is why I attracted the gnome or elf kingdom. I was really into crystals. And I began to understand, when I took my crystal studies to the next level, I started really understanding sound and frequency. And I really understood that quartz was the one I wanted to work with. Even though many colors of the rainbow, many countries on the world, many faces of this planet, that's how it began. I wanted, because I could directly understand what their emanation was, and that it was something I really resisted, because I had a different career before this. I had a lot invested into my art career and that. But there was something else calling me, so that's what I did. And the real catalyst for me starting my healing practice, which is still in germination, was meeting friends and meeting people that were frequency specific, that were like me. And I met a really wonderful person named Nate that is a Reiki master. And he opened up a different level of unfoldment for me. And I'm very grateful for it, because, you know, we've started working together, and that it gave me a forum for a way for me to use my clairvoyant abilities, which became to be rather alarming at one point, because the more energy work I was doing and the more meditation I was doing, it was just like I wanted to just kind of put the blinders on, but my third eye was really open, and I'd done quite a few studies in different places over my whole life, and it all just sort of started culminating, and it was something that was conspiring for me in a really wonderful way, and there was no way of resisting that. But sometimes I think all of us will resist the things that are coming right at you when they're coming up the road. And you're like, okay, here it comes. You're going, no, 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 no. But yeah, that's still developing as far as that practice. But yeah.
So you use gems and or you use crystals to heal with?
No, I used to. I understand now from my contacts is that I don't actually have to pull out rocks to put on people's bodies. It can really help mostly with people understanding that that's there, but there's an ability, there's a healing practice that I'm, you know, really starting to cultivate where I'm calling upon certain continents where some of these gem and mineral friends of mine and the guardians of them are there, and I can call upon those continents and how they relate to the organs and the specific chakra, the energy centers and vortexes within people's bodies without actually having to go in and harvest through various means and all kinds of things. Because, I mean, after going to a lot of crystal and gem shows, I realized that there was, like, you know, kind of these little mini the blowing up wars in these crystal mines and in various continents that are impoverished. And then I realized that I didn't actually need to go in there and pull the actual gems out. So that was something I was doing previously, and it's ever evolving.
So
So
you figured out how to direct the channel from the healing gem or stone.
Yeah, just directly from the earth. Like if the person needs, say, something like we call malachite, certain resonances within the earth, you can actually call upon them, you know, to bring up through that channel without actually, yeah, bringing the rock forward. But what really helps the client is having the touchstone upon them, you know. But, I mean, it's kind of, you know, that's just a different kind of therapy, but or what's it called? You know, oh my gosh, I'm gapping on this. But when you you pretend that it's there,
the psychosomatic effect.
Exactly. Yeah. So the rock, I could take a bunch of granite and place them on their centers or where they need healing, and then call upon that, or I could have all these different colored stones from all the different continents, and that's okay too, but I've been getting more and more messages when I go, like, in the previous years when I was going to these shows, that there was just too much going on in this whole crystal mining thing, and it was getting a bit too much for me, and a bit too, you know, how do you say, shiesty. You know, and people going in, and one miner blowing it up. I just said, you know what? This is not what I came here to do, you know, and that earth healing, you know, through those resonances, because this is a totally living, sentient being that we're working with, that we can call upon her organs to help heal our organs, because our bodies are, you know, none more than a reflection of exactly what she is.
I was just thinking that you said something earlier, and it just, I've never correlated two things. Which, I don't know, it's funny how sometimes things will sit right in front of you. So we have seven chakras, and there's seven continents. And I was just like, is that a coincidence?
I have never really thought there were seven chakras, because I've always seen there's like these really two big ones above the head. But maybe that's just because those are being activated now, because our planet is ascending. She's gaining a whole new energy body. But yeah,
I see it as this.
There wasn't always seven continents either. There was another time.
Yeah.
I see that correlation you're thinking of. I see it as, well, there's seven chakras within the physical body, and then on the physical planet, there's seven continents. Now, and then then we have our satellites. I mean, we have well, it depends on what school of thought you're in, but there's 10 chakras, something like that. You know, I mean, it depends on which school of thought. There's
I've heard 12.
Some that call it say there's more, and some that some that flat out say no, there's only seven. You know.
Sure. Well, all those satellites are also probably quartz based too, and I mean, the origin of this whole thought or epiphany or whatever it was, that your whole body is the crystalline matrix. Your body and your energy field is one big liquid crystal. Yeah. And so you're really not as separate as you think from the earth and from all these things that are there to help you. So, I mean, I think really what I'm trying to get back at from my experience, whatever I'm being gifted to bring to the table, is that we've got to bridge that gap back. And it's actually a very stout bridge. It's not very big, and that it doesn't take much to do it. And I think that bridging that gap back to nature is bridging it back to ourselves, and that you're going to find yourself, you know, maybe running into various beings. And that's kind of part of the whole road. I really didn't expect it, but I've been gifted with that, and I'm going to bring that forward. So.
Yeah. So we're reaching at the top of the hour, right, Tom?
Yes, we are. I was just about ready to say we're going to need to wrap up here for this first hour, and we're going to continue. We're going to continue our conversation with Jana in the archives. So if you are listening and want to hear some more, pop on over to the website and click on the latest show link right at the very first of the page, and it'll take you right to Jana's page, and you can hear the rest of this.
And the webpage is www.conscious-tv.com.
And yeah, Jana, I think everybody out there should be looking to hear more from this young lady, because she has got some things going on, and she's hearing a calling and starting to write for a magazine now, putting an article out, and I foresee some good things happening here. So,
thanks, Don.
All right. So, have a good night, and hope to see you guys in the archive.
All right. Good night, everybody.
Good night.